Hello and welcome to South Asia Chat, a podcast series brought to you by the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. I'm Tanuja Dadlani, research analyst at ISES, and I'll be your host for today's episode. We're excited to welcome Dr. Joyjeet Pal, who studies the role of technology in democracy and labor. He specializes in politicians' use of social media and in misinformation, particularly in India. Welcome, Dr. Pal. Let's begin. How influential is social media in elections? Is it just part of the electoral strategy, or has it become a strategy itself?
So social media is influential at different levels, of politics. So it generally is more influential in urban politics, as you can imagine, less so with rural politics. And you'll see likewise that large national urban politicians tend to invest more in social media than those who are in, say, rural constituencies or standing for MLA elections, etc. So within that, one important point is that social media is used for general narrative building, especially Twitter, as a first line of output from politicians, because the reason why Twitter still matters, though it matters less and less, is because politicians will first talk over there, and then what they say gets translated or taken into account for story making, news making elsewhere, right? So if that is the function, then the politician doesn't have to actually talk directly to journalists, but it looks like they're fairly interactive. So in that sense, social media is very influential in that it is the main channel through which politicians make their major narrative. Now, at the lower level, when I say lower level, I mean like at the general consumption level, social media is the main way through which people are being organized. They're on it a lot. They're talking to each other. There's more and more evidence of news being mainly consumed through social media. So getting hold of the social media narrative is very useful, even in terms of the overall agenda setting with populations which want to make a certain discourse for why they vote one way or the other. So it's important in different levels, for different reasons.
That's really interesting. Thank you for sharing. Can we, to some extent, measure political mood based on social media?
It's quite hard to measure political mood effectively using social media, but there is some amount of a signal that you get, at least from the elite political mood. Okay. So, case in point was in 2019, a little bit before the Balakot strike, social media was abuzz with Chowkidar Chor Hai. And there was a very, very effective campaign to make, by Congress to make the BJP look bad and corrupt and so on and so forth. And that hashtag itself had caught so much fire that it was actually a brief period where Rahul Gandhi was completely outperforming Narendra Modi on Twitter. And then what happened is that then you had the Balakot strikes, and the Modi was able to immediately turn that around into "Main Bhi Chowkidar." Okay. Now, the reason why I narrate this incident to you is that in both cases, social media was a marker of national sentiment. So first, there was public being upset with the Modi government for whether it's corruption or economic performance. The pain, so to speak, of demonetization was still there at the time, right? And so social media gave Congress the sense that, oh, we're going to go after corruption and go after this party in that way. And right after the Balakot strike, the same very same term, which was being used to abuse or like rather politically oppose BJP, became the clarion call of the BJP, Chowkidar itself, because now social media would tell you that the narrative had turned into defense. So, yes, in that sense, social media can be influential in giving you a general sense of what topics people are more attached to. But there also you have to realize that it's giving you more of that sense for urban elites.
Yes, you mentioned the BJP also in your answer, and they have increased a lot of their use of social media. How has BJP's narrative changed over the years on social media?
Well, the BJP has historically been the best organized party online. So even if you were to look at how far back the BJP started having its website and when the Congress started, there's like a 10-year gap between the two. So even today, what we are seeing is social media use on, say, Facebook, a little or a lot of YouTube, some Twitter, etc. Narendra Modi was using social media from the time of Orkut. Okay, so they've really gone after the early days of social media. The BJP's narrative was very much around modernity, so it would be the party to first get on new technology. It would be the party, therefore, that stood for development. And this is obviously a story that continued well into the 2014 election. The Vikas thing was the major thrust of the BJP's narrative at the time. And then after that, then you see again defense turning into more of a central narrative. And now there is this global leadership, or that BJP, on much more specifically personality centered around Modi, stands for the nation and for a larger global vision. And so in that sense, you could say that there are those three at least distinct phases in the way that BJP's signaling has changed on social media. Also, as opposed to earlier, when there was a small number of key politicians who were in the party and actively on social media, now it's very broad-based. Even before the 2019 election, Modi had said that anybody with less than 300,000 followers on Twitter shouldn't even bother to be expecting a ticket. So if you say something like that, then that really pretty much means that everyone from the party is going to get involved and engaged in doing stuff on social media. Once you do that, you still have the narrative, but then the narrative can take all kinds of directions because, people are going to say things which are slightly more independent-minded than what the party's strict line is. So even though some parties do a better job of keeping their politicians in line, the discourse is changing because there's always some wildcard character who says random stuff, and then that person gets a following, and it changes the discourse in that direction.
I see. You mentioned the 10-year gap between when the BJP started using social media and when Congress started using it. How have the opposition parties aligned their social media strategy to counter the BJP?
So, opposition parties are on social media. Social media is multiple things at a given point of time. So if you are the big dog on Twitter or X, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to obviously, ace the elections themselves. But that being said, the BJP has a massive advantage over all the other opposition parties in terms of social media output. For one, besides the fact that it is well-funded and fairly well-centralized, it has an exclusive, or rather not an, at least not exclusive, a very significantly better access to influencers on social media than any of the other parties. So even though you can see there's some elements of Congress learning from BJP style in coordinated attacks against certain kinds of ideas, building up Rahul Gandhi's social media account very carefully. So there's that kind of learning. And you can obviously look at other parties. Akhilesh Yadav does a fairly intense amount of work on social media in terms of branding, et cetera, et cetera. So they're growing in that sense, but they just don't have that level of organization as well as broad-based public support among elites that the BJP has. So, today it's trivial for BJP leaders to get on a podcast or a YouTube show with a major influencer. Whereas for opposition parties, the big ticket influencers don't want to go there because they are concerned about getting on the wrong side of the BJP if they start getting too many Congress-leaning influencers over there. And so, in that sense, the ruling party is going to have a huge advantage, even if the opposition have slightly more consolidated their strategies, etc.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the social media influences because they're another dynamic in this political discourse. Can you enlighten us on how social media influences can have an impact in politics?
Well, so for starters, your politicians are no longer even talking to the press directly through interviews quite as much, right? If you don't talk to the press, then how are you getting through to the people? Well, one is you're doing what you're doing on Twitter and putting up clips of yourself. But the classic politician interview with a journalist, in which case, sometimes a journalist had to be a slightly friendly journalist. Or else, doesn't want to make the prime minister look bad, or any politician look bad. So there was like a delicate art of doing high quality political journalism. Since influencers have come into the picture, there is this huge shift right now of politicians doing their interviews with influencers who, A, they don't understand the topics at all, so they don't know what policy-related questions to ask. So it's a kind of a very easy interview. And B, that same influencer makes the politician look human in certain ways that a regular interview would not. So we are generally used to seeing a politician in politician mode. But when they go on a travel influencer website, then we look at a human side of them. And that makes us think about the politician much more warmly than we would if we're just seeing them doing the regular interviews with journalists. So this kind of has two levels of value to politicians in terms of the way that they can present themselves. But there is yet another very important factor, which is that influencers have followers from across the political spectrum. So an influencer who does some stuff on, say, tech reviews, that person doesn't necessarily have all their followers belong to one political party. They're from a spread. Whereas the mainstream news sources have become highly polarized. So, which means that if you go on Republic TV and you do an interview, it's kind of useless because the people who are watching that show are already on your side. So, point here is that because media is so polarized, that means that influencers are in a unique position to take beneficial access to politically diverse populations from all ends of that spectrum. So being able to corner influencers and reach populations through them, whether it's interviews or whether it's them endorsing you or say, playing up an idea which is generally associated with your side, that is very, very beneficial in the social media discourse. And clearly, one party is doing that much better in India.
Thank you.
All
And another
right.
aspect of the social media is something that's not talked about much, is WhatsApp. Which digital media platforms, including WhatsApp, are the most influential in election campaigns?
So each of the social media platforms plays a different role. So think about Twitter as being the broadcast role for continuous output from politicians, because the politician can't constantly put out clips of themselves. So whenever they need to say little things all day, you're updating to the general population happens through Twitter. Okay, so Twitter has a fairly small reach, I think somewhere in the range of like 40 million or something in India. What is important is that the people who are on Twitter are all the journalists. So whatever you say on Twitter is then going to make it to the news. Then Facebook is the place where these people get organized into groups. So the kinds of conversations that you can have on Twitter are a little bit limited compared to what you can say in Facebook, because that is where people can feel safe that everybody from their same ideology is on a certain group. So then they're feel free to use slurs or whatever it is, extreme language that they want to use. So the slightly higher level of radicalization is happening on Facebook compared to, say, Twitter. Then you have YouTube, and YouTube is basically the medium for influencers who are aligned with one or another political party to put out a lot of their content. And along with that, basically your news sources, which have also turned into influencers in some sense, they put out a lot of news which leans one way or another in an election year. And then that ends up becoming sort of propaganda material for you as a political party. Then the last and perhaps the most important then is WhatsApp, because that is the last line of connectivity. So think about whatever is successful on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube. When they become clips, they make it to WhatsApp. Like, this is the one that's going viral. We're going to put this on WhatsApp, and we're going to get more of our supporters onto this by it just gives us a sense of what has a higher success likelihood. So WhatsApp is used for things like organizing community groups, getting people to show up on the day of election. So it has a lot of logistical value also, besides just the propaganda value, which is what the other three mediums provide.
Yep. Thank you very much. Thank you
All
for your
right.
time and insight, Dr. Palk. You have been listening to South Asia Chat. To learn more about our work, please visit us at iss.nus.edu.sg. You can also get updates from our social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter.